Today I would like to tell you the story of Eli. Not the biblical Eli, but this Eli is someone who came into the church and spent many, many, many years going through many, many, many things in God's church. Eli is a composite church member. I've compiled Eli's story by compiling a number of various situations that many of us have gone through. I do not model Eli after any one person in this room, lest you wonder after I get through some of this, is he thinking about me? No, I'm thinking about various situations that I've either experienced myself, counseled others as they've experienced, or heard of, has been the case in various people. I want to tell you the story of Eli's life as he grows spiritually through one particular thing, and that is service. As Eli serves in the church, and he grows from that experience. Because I think that I was going to address the idea of service, but looking around the congregation, I know we have so many who already value service and are already involved in so many ways. And I know that you appreciate that the Bible talks about the importance of service. And so I wanted to approach this in a little different way and basically show you that we tend to go through various phases. And this is true with regard to service or any other area which we might participate. But we tend to go through phases where we learn. We grow spiritually mature as we go through these things. Spiritual maturity is a long process. I think we all could acknowledge that we see things in ourselves that maybe we didn't see 10 years ago. And as I tell Eli's story, I hope that we can perhaps identify a little bit with some of it and see how serving really does help us grow spiritually within the church. I'll start off with Eli as a brand new member coming into God's church, very excited about God's truth and very social, very much wanting to meet new people and getting to know a number of people in the church as he spent his first few months attending services. But what he found was that over time, he really wasn't developing any deep relationships with anyone. It didn't seem that he really had any contact with anyone outside of services themselves. And he began to get a little frustrated with that he seemed lonely. And he needed extra fellowship, but it just simply was not there. And he heard in a sermon, Luke chapter 14, if you would turn over to Luke chapter 14. We're going to kind of tell this story and follow this Eli composite member. Things that he hears, things that he learns, things that he reads, and how he responds to them. Luke chapter 14, and we'll read verse 12 through 14. Eli hears this in a sermon, and he wonders why it's not put into practice in the local congregation. It says, Then he also said to them who invited him, this is Christ said to them, when you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, or your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, and you shall be repaid in the resurrection of the just. Now, we could read this quite literally and go up to someone and say, hey, you look pretty lame. You look pretty poor, too, from the way you're dressed. And I doubt you would ever invite me over to your house for fellowship. So why don't you come to dinner tonight? You're someone that I can be blessed by God if I invite over. Well, obviously, that's not what they're talking about. And in that day and age, there were a number of people who were very poor and had physical deformities and were blind. And there was a lot of physical problems. And oftentimes, those are the people who are overlooked. And the point being that we ought to consider those who may need fellowship. They may have a special need for more fellowship. They may be lonely. Maybe they're not necessarily the people that we would normally be best friends with, but they're people who may need that extra reach out. They may not be on the same level, socioeconomic level as we are, But again, they have needs. And that's what we're told that we will be blessed for if we look out for. Well, in our story of Eli, he read this verse and he recognized he was a person who had needs, and the brethren just simply weren't fulfilling that need. Let's go back to Luke chapter 17, just a few pages back. And this is an admonition for us to be conscientious of those who may have needs, and we should intervene to help them in some way. It says in Luke 17, verse 1, "Then he said to the disciples, 'It is impossible that no offenses should come, but woe to him through whom they do come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea than that he should offend one of these little ones.'" Now, we have the impression here that he's talking about individuals who may be new to the faith. And we are to keep a lookout for those who, whether they're new to the faith or not, they have needs, someone that we can serve in some way. But Eli did not feel that he was being served, that people were acting in a real Christian manner. But he did read other verses as time went by, like Luke 17, verse 3 through 4. We're already in Luke 17, so if you just look down a little bit there, verses 3. "Take heed to yourselves. If your brother sins against you, rebuke him, and if he repents, forgive him. If he sins against you seven times in a day, and seven times a day he returns to you saying, 'I repent,' you shall forgive him." And he realized that there are many scriptures in the Bible that talk about forgiveness, that maybe he's just not forgiving others. And he also read in Proverbs 18, if you turn back to Proverbs 18, 24, he read something that made him think that maybe I should change my way of thinking. Maybe it's not everybody else. Maybe it's partly me that's the problem. And this is really indicative to our spiritual growth. Sometimes we go through a struggle. We may become offended at something or upset at something. But sometimes we take a look at ourselves and realize that, hey, I'm part of the problem. I'm part of the problem. When I do marriage counseling and there is a conflict, but in various areas, sometimes we'll just sit down and write, okay, how am I contributing to this problem? Because everybody contributes to a problem typically when there is a problem. You know, how am I contributing to it? And Eli realized when he read Proverbs 18, verse 24, it says, "A man who has friends must show himself friendly." He realized that, well, maybe I need to step out a little more. And I think we've all read this verse and realized that, you know, we can't just place the burden of fellowship on everybody else. It's important for us to show ourselves friendly and to actually reach out to others. So Eli did the thing he ought to have done. He realized that he can grow. He can change his perspective a little bit. And so he started reaching out to others as well. And he realized also, as it says in Matthew 7, 3, you don't have to turn there, but you know, before you try to remove the speck from your brother's eye, remove the plank from your own. And oftentimes that's the case when we're bothered by someone else's actions. Oftentimes we have similar problems. We just may not see it. We may not be noticing it. And so Eli, again, did the right thing. He began to see that he could take action. No one had to make him feel a certain way when he came to services. He has control over his feelings, and he can just reach out to others. And so he continued coming to church for a good while, and one time it just jumped out at him what he read in Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 3 just jumped out. He had read it before, as is the case oftentimes in our lives. We've read these scriptures, but they hit us in a different way sometimes. And Galatians chapter 5, verse 3 says that, "For you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Only do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another." He always thought that he was a person who showed love toward others, but he really wasn't involved in serving. Now, again, I'm going to focus my attention today on serving in the church. We can serve in many ways outside of the bounds of the congregation. But I have to limit it to something, otherwise we'll be here for 3 hours. So I'm limiting it to just serving within the church. And Eli thought, you know, I really don't serve. I don't do anything. I talk to people and enjoy people's company, but I really don't serve. Maybe I should participate in service in some way. And so he looked around. for several weeks, and everything seemed to be pretty covered. There was no glaring needs that he needed to fill. And so maybe there's really not a need, he thought. And then he turned back to Matthew 20 in verse 25, and this convinced him that he did not need to serve. Matthew 20, verse 25. And unfortunately, many people will interpret this verse this way. We'll come back to it later in the sermon. But Matthew 20, verse 25 says, "Whoever desires to be great among you, let him be your servant." And Eli got to thinking, I have no ambitions to be great. I don't want to pretend or stand out and get all this attention like I'm trying to be somebody special. I don't have all these pretentious ambitions. That's not me. I just want to be in the background. And so to serve would make it seem like I want to be great. And unfortunately, sometimes people will take the perspective that if someone is serving, it's just for their own, you know, for their own ego or to gain something in some way. But I find in the church that's a rarity. Most people are very mature in their service, and it's not for what they might gain out of it. But sometimes if we're younger or if we're less mature, we can just attribute motives to people who may not have those motives at all. But Eli decided, I don't need to be great. I don't need to be recognized in some way. So he decided that service was not necessary. And I have run into this, and perhaps you have too, that it really isn't so essential because everything's covered, and I don't want to stand out as someone trying to make something of myself. But most of us, when we make a decision that may not be the best, we tend to be pricked by our conscience. God's Spirit works that way. He pricks us. We can't just set it aside. It continues to bother us, and that's what happened to Eli. He read scriptures like Acts 20, verse 35, where it says it's more blessed to give than to receive. He'd been receiving all these blessings and the service of others, but he wasn't really giving himself, and his conscience bothered him. He noticed that when he wanted to serve, or he thought about serving, he came to see that really the bottom line is he didn't really want to. He thought he ought to in his conscience, but he really didn't want to. And it started to bother him. Why is that? Why is it that I really prefer not to? And he read some verses like in Proverbs. If you turn back to Proverbs 19, verse 24. And this is another place where we mature. We begin to be pricked by our conscience, but sometimes we don't take the action that maybe God's Spirit is leading us to take. And we're pricked and we wonder about it, and God doesn't give up. He continues to want to change our way of thinking. And sometimes it comes to seeing something about ourselves that maybe we didn't see before. And this is what happens in Eli's case. In Proverbs 19, verse 24, it's kind of a humorous verse. It says, "A lazy man buries his hand in the bowl and will not so much as bring it up to his mouth again." Always smile, and then you get your hand down the cereal in the morning, and I don't want to bring it up, man. It's too much work. And, of course, it's really exaggerating the issue. Who really does that? But the point is that sometimes a lazy person, when we are lazy, sometimes it is silly. You know, a lot of people would think it's silly sometimes when we are lazy. It says in Proverbs 20, verse 4, "A lazy man will not plow because of the winter. You will beg during the harvest and have nothing." And this is an example of making excuses. "Yeah, I can't plow because look at it out there. You know, look at it. God wouldn't expect me to be out in that stuff." But the diligent ones get out, and even in unpleasant weather, they're doing things. But Eli begins to see that the fruit of his life is that he tends to be somewhat lazy. Notice in Proverbs 15, verse 19. Proverbs 15, 19 can be taken figuratively and literally. Proverbs 15, 19, it says, "The way of a lazy man is like a hedge of thorns, but the way of the upright is a highway." If you think about it, the way of a lazy man his path forward tends to be filled with problems. Now, a diligent person's way forward can be filled with problems, but the lazy person typically is more so because they haven't taken time to plan, to prepare for what they're, where they're trying to go and what they're trying to accomplish. They just expect it will be there. And come to find out, it's full of thorns. The upright man, or the diligent man who plans and thinks ahead, prepares, the way to his goal is open, like a highway. He can get right to it. There's also another literal way of looking at this. If you imagine walking into a lazy man's place and there's all kinds of thorns that haven't been cut back and you're having to, you know, catch your dress on something or your shirt on some thorn as you walk by because they just haven't taken time to trim back the path to their home. But the diligent or upright man, the path is clear. And so there's a literal and a figurative way that we can understand this. Proverbs 21, verse 25. Proverbs 21, verse 25, just a few pages back. It says, "The desire of a lazy man kills him, for his hands refuse to labor." And Eli began to see that he did have certain desires in life, and many of them were not met. Because he came to see he's got a problem with laziness. Now, you may not have a problem with laziness. Perhaps you never have. But some people do. Everyone has their own struggles. And oftentimes we have to come to grips with the reality that I've got a problem I didn't know I had. Or I didn't want to acknowledge I had the problem. But, you know, God's Spirit works with us. And eventually, he wants us to step back and say, hey, no, I don't like to admit it, but in Eli's case, you know, I've been lazy. I don't really want to serve, but I know I should. And so Eli began to address the issue that he was simply lazy, and that was the biggest deal. He was looking for excuses. And so he decided that, you know, I'm not going to make excuses anymore. I'm going to get right in there. I'm going to participate in serving. Now, this was 6 or 7 years after he's been in the church. And he's just reaching this point. He's been staying away from it, making excuses, thinking he's being spiritual by not wanting to be great and be somebody special. But he's now coming to see that, no, I've got a problem. I'm lazy. I need to work on this. So he decided he would get involved. But then he thought, who do I go to? How do I volunteer? You know, what's the process of getting involved? I haven't done that before. You know, where is the help needed? It looks like everything's covered. He didn't know what to do, and he almost changed his mind again. And that often happens with us as well. As soon as we start on a path to change something, suddenly Satan steps in, presenting all these potential roadblocks. Oftentimes they're not real, but they are in our minds. And to try to make us decide differently. We make a decision to do what's right, and Satan gets in there and tries to block the way. Well, we have to move ahead with it. And Eli does that. He moves ahead, and he talks to the pastor, and he asks what he could do. And he's asked about his interests, his skills, his experience. The pastor recommends two things. Why don't you go join the setup crew and the sound crew? Two simple things. Every church has them. He asked him to go do that, and Eli's pretty happy about it. He loves working with technology, so the sound crew would be wonderful. And he really needs to overcome this laziness, and the setup crew has a lot of work to set up and take down, so this will be good. So he approaches the setup crew leader and says, I'd like to join the crew. And the leader says, yeah, come on aboard. All the hands we can get. It makes the work lighter. Join in. I'll show you what we do. And he's working with that for a few weeks, and then he approaches the sound crew chief, and the sound crew chief says, we're set. We don't need your help. And so he goes back and says, you know, I really would like to. And he's, you know, the guys that's been on our crew have been doing it for years. And, you know, I really think they've got it covered. Another person would just, you know, make things a little more complicated. You know, we got it covered. We've been doing it for years. We don't need your help. And later on, he approaches again. He says, you know, he's told that he really is becoming kind of a bother. Everything is set. We don't need you. Now, I can use that example because I know our sound crew's always been very inclusive here and has young people serving and all that. But sometimes we do run into situations on, maybe it's not the sound crew, but various other areas where there is a set crew and there's no letting anybody else in, because people can sometimes guard their space, guard their territory. If I let someone else in, they may prove themselves to be better than me at this job, and I really want to keep my job. and I don't want this person on the crew. You know, those are not things that are oftentimes stated, but they're felt. There's a threat. And so Eli decides, after feeling he's been somewhat rudely rebuffed for several times, he decides that I don't want to serve with people like that. Now, I'm going to repeat a similar phrase as we go through the sermon, because this is something that becomes a problem when we serve and we participate. Sometimes we run into people that we don't like the way they're treating us or how they're phrasing things. We don't think they appreciate us the way we should be appreciated. And we decide, basically, you know, it's the sour grapes. I don't want to serve with people like that. And so this is the way Eli felt. So he focused on his service on the setup crew. Stopped trying to get onto the sound crew. After a few months of continuing to serve on the setup crew, he noticed that there were some things that could be done differently. And probably should be done differently, because it would save time, it would save manpower. And so he brought those things up to the crew leader, and his ideas were rejected. Now, this was very hurtful to Eli, because he knew he was right. He knew that his ideas would help the setup crew, and that things would be much better if they yielded to his ideas. And so he continued to work, but every time he heard certain scriptures, it made him think of the problem on the setup crew, the fact that his ideas were not listened to. He heard in the sermon, Philippians 2, verse 4, where it says, let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but the interests of others. Well, why can't the crew chief look at Eli's interests? Doesn't he respect him as a person, his ideas? The idea of doing to others as you would have them do unto you. This verse came to mind, and he became even more frustrated that his ideas weren't listened to, and all this extra work was going in. So after a couple of years of really brooding over that, he decided to quit the crew. I don't need that kind of frustration on the Sabbath. I don't need that kind of frustration. It's the Sabbath. Now, I've felt that way sometimes over my years. Perhaps you have too, where sometimes it's just easier to avoid a problem than to try to work it out. Working out problems can take a lot of energy, a lot of emotional energy. It can take time. So sometimes we just decide, I don't want that anymore. I'll just get out of it. And so Eli did. And after a few months, it was clear that Eli was different. The pastor noticed things weren't quite well with him, and he spoke with him. And after Eli explained the situation of the setup crew, the pastor acknowledged that things probably were not being done the most efficient way on the setup crew. But the pastor asked Eli, why does it matter so much? Why is it such a big thing to you? And Eli thought, well, I guess it is a bit overblown, but this is how I feel, you know. And Eli had to step back and realize that sometimes it's easy to really exaggerate problems. And maybe he had exaggerated a little too much in his mind, but he really still had a problem with the people. Maybe it's not the process so much, but the people just weren't always respectful to me. I have issues with those people on the crew. Come to find out, Eli had set the problem aside, continued to brood on it, and watch these people and what they were doing on the crew, continue every week to get angrier at what they were doing, even when he wasn't on the crew and serving. And that anger grew and grew to the point that it was almost consuming. When he would come to church, he was preparing to be angry. Angry as he walked in the door. And that's something that emotional problems can do, is they can consume us. Even before we get to church, we can become so angry at situations or people and not deal with it, but it just consumes us. And the root of bitterness, I have found, one of the hardest things for anybody to overcome is a root of bitterness, because they begin to thrive on that bitterness. They need it. It motivates them. They can't imagine life without it. And it's very difficult to get through that. But Eli does. Because if he didn't, the sermon would end now. He would leave the church, his service would be over, and the sermon would only be 24 minutes, and we have to go a little longer than that. So Eli does the right thing. He acknowledges that he needs to deal with his anger. But you know, I say that in jest, but in reality, that's the way most of us have to do. We go through problems, and we acknowledge that, you know, yeah, I didn't approach that the right way. I should reevaluate how I feel about these things. Finally, after several months, Eli was able to overcome the anger, and he began to realize that he also had been self-willed in demanding his way be implemented. He also had been somewhat arrogant in thinking he had a better way and assuming that it was right and becoming frustrated when his ideas were not implemented. He began to see that he had a part in it too. And that was a way that he was able to grow. He actually, at one point, went and apologized to the sound crew chief and to the other people on the sound crew for how he was angry with them. And they didn't know it was such a big deal with him. He hadn't let on, and they were surprised. And they apologized for their actions. And he joined setup crew again, continuing to serve. This time with a little more maturity of understanding how things go and how to deal with them in life. Not become so frustrated. But something else began to bother him a couple years later as he's serving hard. He's finally overcome the laziness. And his service is so much so that people are noticing and appreciating how much he's doing and how well he's doing it. He serves in various ways, and he's very involved. And he begins to see something in himself that he doesn't like. That is the fact that he enjoys being recognized for his service. He'd even had thoughts that maybe he, if he keeps going down this road, maybe he will be ordained. And those thoughts began to bother him because that wasn't the way he was. He wasn't that kind of guy. He's the kind of guy that read Matthew 20, said, "I don't want to be great, therefore I'm not going to serve." He thought that he wasn't that kind of guy, and he sees this developing in him. And he reads scriptures like Philippians 2, verse 3. Philippians 2, verse 3. And these scriptures bother him. It says in Philippians 2 and verse 3, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition and conceit." And he realized, I have ambition. I love for these people to see me serving. In fact, I'd rather serve and be seen than serve not be seen. If you go back to Matthew chapter 20 and verse 20, we're going to turn to another scripture in a little bit, but you might hold your place or put your ribbon marker in Matthew 20. We'll come back to that. Matthew 20 verse 20 was another thing that just struck Eli. Because he didn't want to be this way. He didn't want to fall into the category of what these disciples were doing and their mother. Matthew 20 and verse 20 says, "Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to him," came to Christ, "with her sons, kneeling down and asking something from him. And he said to her, 'What do you wish for?'" What do you wish? "And she said to him, 'Grant that these two sons of mine may sit one at your right hand and one at the left in your kingdom.'" In other words, that they can be right beside you in rulership, right under you. Now, this is sheer ambition. And obviously, this didn't turn out well. We know the rest of the story. The other disciples were very upset that the two disciples and their mother came with this kind of ambition. Now, they were probably upset because they had that ambition too. But they were very upset. And Eli did not want to be this kind of guy. And he began to think, "I shouldn't serve anymore. Because I have the wrong motives. I can see them now. I have the wrong motives." You know, I think that, first of all, we have to step back and acknowledge that Eli is just like anybody else. Sometimes the motives were there all along. It's just the opportunity for them to grow and to show never was there. And now that he's serving, and serving quite a bit, the opportunity for those motives that are based on that human nature grows. Had he never served, he would have never realized that he has this problem, or he could have this problem. But it's only by serving that he began to see that motives can be a problem. And I think that oftentimes those who serve begin to see that our motives, they're not as pure as we want them to be. We do appreciate the accolades of others. We do appreciate the opportunity for others to to see that we are serving. And it's hard because human nature is there. There's a little bit of pride and vanity in everybody. And we begin to, and God's Spirit helps us see that we've developed something that isn't in line with a godly way of living. And we all have a choice. I'm going to stop because I've got wrong motives. Well, if we stop, there's no way to work through those motives, to change how we feel. That same human nature that caused the wrong motives is still there. We just stop doing it so that the opportunity for it to show is not there. But the problem isn't the fact that we have the motives. The problem is the fact that we need to overcome them. It was always there. Our human nature always was there. It would have produced this at some point. Under the right circumstances, we can become something we never thought we could be. Under the circumstances, if they're just right. And Eli had become a great servant, and he realized his emotion or his ambitions were getting out of control. He was becoming quite selfish. But he realized that he had to continue. He had to keep going in order to grow. And he would work on his ambition, he would work on his motives as he served. And that's really the only way to deal with it. To continue on and to work on our ambitions. If he stopped serving, he never worked through the problem. He never overcome this selfish ambition. Hold your place in Matthew 20, but turn back to Matthew 25. Eli began to focus on other motivations as he served. He began to, of course, recognize the negative things he felt, but learn to substitute better things for those. And we will pick up this story, Matthew 25, where Christ says that in verse 35, "For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. I was naked, you clothed me, and sick, and you visited me. In prison, you came to me." And the righteous will answer him and say, "Lord, when did we see you in these ways? When did we see you hungry and feed you, and thirsty and give you drink?" And notice he says in verse 40, "And the king will answer and say to them, 'Assuredly, I say to you, insomuch as you did it to one of the least of my brethren, you did it to me.'" So we see here a similar concept to inviting those who are the poor, the lame, the blind. If we do this to the least of the brethren, we do it to Christ. And we begin to see in our service here today, and Eli in his service, that it's not for the accolades, it's not for the position, it's because we're serving God. And sometimes it's just a matter of refocusing our attention and doing it with another motive in mind. And that's how we grow. It's fine to see problems. We see problems because God's Spirit has shown us the problem. What we don't want to do is ignore it, push it aside. What we want to do is begin to overcome. And in this case, Eli did the right thing. He began to see he could refocus his motivations, and in this case, learning to serve God rather than serving to be seen. Now, time passed, and he dealt with the issues of his motivations, and finally, a number of years later, he was finally accepted onto the sound crew. Long ambitious to be part of the sound crew. He had learned a few things since he first wanted to be on the sound crew, but he was accepted onto the sound crew, and he was very gifted, and he soon wanted to be the leader of the sound crew. He felt that he was talented enough. He had served for years in the church by now, and he really wanted to be the leader. Now, let's go back to Matthew chapter 20. Matthew 20, and we'll pick up in verse 22. This is, again, two of the disciples and their mother coming to Christ and saying, "Let us be at your right hand and your left." And Jesus answered in verse 22 and said, "Do you not know what you ask?" I will stop right there. Oftentimes, we don't know what we're asking when we desire to be in a position of some sort of leadership. Because oftentimes, there are many problems that we are not aware of. Oftentimes, we have desires in our heart of where we want to be and what we want to be doing. And we don't recognize the problems that come along with that. Of course, this scripture goes on to say, "Are you able to drink of the cup that I'm about to drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm going to be baptized with?" And they said to him, "We're able." "Oh yeah, we can do it. Let's have this position with you." Now, of course, they don't realize what's entailed. But applying it not necessarily to what the apostles ultimately had to go through, even in their deaths, to stand up for the truth, which is what he was referring to here. I want to apply it to the fact that sometimes we want things and we don't know what is really entailed if we were to get those things. Look at how many people's lives have been ruined when they wanted to win the lottery and they won it. Suddenly they're rich and it ruined their lives. Very few people and their families can make it through such trials. We want it, but it's not really what's good for us. I remember when I worked at Orr years ago, I remember starting off on the dish crew, and that's where I met Mr. Lord and worked with him those summers. But I worked in the kitchen, and I always dreamed what it might be like to work outside on the ski crew, to drive boats, power boats, and jet boats, and drive these things around the lake without a care in the world, get all tan, and just, wow, what a great life. A few years later, I got to be on the ski crew. You wake up first thing in the morning, you go wipe all the dead gnats off your boat that you're responsible for. You get out there and do some silly little skit to try to teach the kids how to ski, and you take them out in the water, and one of the campers gets in the water, and you tell them, you know, the instruction, and then you power it, and they come up and they fall down. So you turn around, do the figure eight, you go right back around them, tell them what they need to do, same thing you've already told them, and then you get set, and you power it up, vroom, they come up and they fall down. They come up, they fall down, they come up, and you do circles all day. That's ski crew, circles all day. Now, there were a few other, you know, you could go skiing when you wanted to, but mainly it's circles, telling people the same thing you've already told them. There really are no glamour jobs. Every job has its problem. And sometimes we can think, well, if I were just in charge, everything, they would do it my way, and I wouldn't have any troubles. And I think that's an interesting phrase. Christ said, you do not know what you ask. And that's oftentimes the case when we want to do something. I'm not saying we shouldn't want to serve, but we always have to expect that nothing's glamorous. Everything has its problems, and we have to be able to maturely deal with those problems. After a while, Eli became the leader, and it was great for a while. He began to see that his crew members didn't always follow through on things the way they were supposed to. He began to see that some of them wanted him to change the way they were doing things. But he was in charge. They ought to just do it his way. But they thought they knew better than him. He's the one who has the experience. He's the one who's been doing it for years. He's got these young people coming up and saying, we should change this. And that bothered him. He became upset with a couple of the crew members in particular. He just didn't think they were showing him the proper respect. He was the crew leader. So he decided to dismiss them from the crew. Didn't need their help. I don't need these kinds of frustrations on the Sabbath. Well, obviously the pastor hears the complaint from the two who want to serve, but they've been kicked off the crew. And he approaches Eli. Eli's a little frustrated. The pastor's questioning his judgment. After all, he's the one in charge. And he finally admits that he never really spoke to the crew members openly and had a nice discussion with them about, you know, what he was frustrated with. It was just expected them to follow orders. He's the crew chief. The pastor explained Matthew 20, verse 25. That's probably where you are now. What he had read early on in his service in the church that kept him from serving, suddenly he realized he's fallen into the trap. He'd read this many times, but it was different now because he was experiencing something different. And that's the way the Bible is. When we experience something differently, we go through different problems. We're at the other end of the equation sometimes. Now he's the crew leader, not the new person on the crew trying to suggest ideas. Suddenly, this verse comes across in a different way. Verse 25, but Jesus called them to himself and said, You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lorded over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. And this was truly the case in Christ's day. The leaders in the Roman world, oftentimes it was all about their extravagance, their great palaces, their great power, their great riches. It was all about the show. And all the, you know, everybody fawning over them various ways. The power and the riches and the show. And he said, that's not the way it is to be. Yet it is not to be so among you. Whoever desires to be great among you, let him be your servant. Let him be your servant. Now, of course, this isn't talking about those who desire to be ordained or those who desire to be seen by everybody. It's talking about those who desire to be a better spiritual person, who desires to be seen by God as being mature. You can put it in terms of the great people of the world, which he did, those people out there. But within the church, it's not about the show. If you desire to be a leader, be a servant. Whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as Christ did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And I think the more we find ourselves serving and even leading, the more we find that sometimes things don't go our way as easily as they should. It's not just a matter of I speak it and it happens. It doesn't always work that way. You know, you have to work with people, deal with people, and that sometimes can be very difficult and bring problems. But a servant, a person who has a servant's heart, it's not about I say it, you do it. It's about let's work together and make this happen. Sometimes it's about, you know, I know that I'm in charge, and I know that I think my way's better, but maybe it'll help that person if we do it their way. I can take that hit. It might be a little tough on my old pride to set my way aside and say, okay, you know, let's do it your way. But I can take that hit because I'm a bond slave. I'm a servant. That's my job, is to serve. And we learn as we grow through these things, just as Eli in my story here, he learns that he had approached it just from the organizational standpoint. I'm in charge. But in reality, this could have been an opportunity for him to let someone implement their ideas, to take the hit as a servant, and to have more of the attitude of a servant. Now, this doesn't come except we go through some punches. A real servant's heart can't just be thought up or read about. We have to go through punches. We have to take them. We have to be like Christ, who did not come to be served, but to serve, and actually died for us. That's the essence of true servanthood and leadership, is the willingness to suffer for others. But it's not what comes to mind early in our spiritual walk. Eli came to see this. He came to see the right approach to, if anyone wants to be great among you, let him be your servant. He also realized that he had not practiced something that he had known for ages. I mean, how often does that happen with us? We know that the scripture says in Matthew 18, go to your brother. But that, how hard is that when there's a problem? You know, it's easier to avoid them. It's easier just to avoid the issue. If we feel like I just don't want that kind of frustration on the Sabbath, it's easier to stay home. But then we don't grow. We don't put ourselves into that environment where we have to be frustrated and learn to change. See things about ourselves. Learn to approach things in a positive way, in a constructive way. We just don't grow when we leave the situation. Now, that's not to say that there aren't situations. Sometimes there's abusive situations that, it's appropriate to leave. But I'm talking about the normal frustrations we go through that sometimes we just rather not deal with. Scripture says to go to our brother. It's not easy. No matter how long we've been in the church, sometimes we're challenged by that. Again, Matthew 7 verse 12, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Sometimes it's hard to put those things into practice. And it's okay that it's hard. The important thing is to do our best and push forward and make it happen. So Eli continued to serve for many years, but he wasn't quite yet fully finished. See, God was using Eli to shape him, to prepare him for his future role, as he's preparing each of us for our future roles in the kingdom. God uses service to shape us, to mold us. And even in his latter years, Eli continued to serve. But as he looked around in all the years he'd served, he began to be frustrated that he was one of what seemed like a few who really gave it their all. All people pitched in, helped on this crew, that crew, occasionally, maybe not consistently. But why weren't people more willing to serve like he was? To give it their all the way he was. He began to be upset that others weren't giving as much as he was. Galatians 6 and verse 9. Eli came to see that even that was a wrong perspective. Yeah, it would be great if everyone served to the same degree and the same vigor, but, you know, this is not practical. People learn, they grow, and sometimes we have to just accept the fact that some people, it's not as much in their nature, and sometimes we can become a little more judgmental toward others. Galatians 6, verse 9. And let us not grow weary while doing good. Eli realized he had wearied. And he was frustrated that others weren't necessarily picking up the slack. He goes on to say, in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have the opportunity, let us do good to all, especially those of the household of faith. And verses like this can encourage us as we grow older and as we serve for many years, that we are not to grow weary, that we have a reward, that we keep going. Even if we do begin to see others and they're not serving with the same zeal we are. If you go back to James 4, verse 11 and 12. James chapter 4, verse 11 and 12. It says, do not speak evil of one another. You know, it's easy to speak evil or even think evil, to judge other people because they're not living up to the standards that maybe we think they ought to. And especially sometimes as we get older in the church, you know, we've grown, we've matured, and we see things, and maybe others just haven't grown to the point they see it the way we do. And it's very easy to become judgmental. And that's another thing we have to work through. It goes on to say in verse 12, there is one lawgiver, one who is able to save and destroy. Who are you to judge another? That's something we have to learn. As we serve, as we're involved with one another at services, as we're involved with one another in other events, as we learn to refrain from judgment, refrain from being critical. It's so easy to become critical because we see things we don't like. But that is something we have to learn. And Eli began to see that he had to battle that tendency to be judgmental. Because there is a little bit of self-righteousness in being judgmental. And he began to see that even after years in the church, there was something still that he needed to grow in. Well, as Eli aged in the church and continued to serve, he began to really appreciate that it was through that service that he was able to grow in the ways that he had. Had he never served, he would have never faced some of those problems. Had he never served, he would have never realized that he has a human nature that in certain instances, certain things come out that aren't good. But he was able to overcome those things and grow, learn to see people in a different way, learn to deal with situations in a different way. And it all came from being involved. And the same thing is true for us. And we should never seek to avoid challenging ourselves, seek to avoid other people because we are frustrated by them. We pray about it and we say, what can I learn? How can I practice servanthood and deal with this situation? How can I be a better servant in God's eyes and deal with these situations that come about because we're together and we're serving one another in various ways? I think that it's through a life of service and giving that we really come to appreciate Galatians 2 verse 20. I think all of us can appreciate it to one degree or another, even when we're brand new to the faith. But when we really have been through a lot with one another, and we've suffered with one another, we've borne with one another, sometimes these verses stand out all the more. Galatians 2, verse 20, where Paul says, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. The more we allow Christ to live in us, to work through us, to serve through us, the more we actually come to see that this is God. This is not me. It's not about me. This is about God working through me. Our motives begin to change. Our approach begins to change. It goes on to say, in the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. So we begin to see Galatians 2:20 in a little different light. And also Romans 12, verse 1. As we mature through serving one another in the various ways that we do, our attitude changes about one another, it changes about ourselves, it changes about God. Romans 12, verse 1 says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. The idea here is that we sacrifice ourselves, and we're not put to death, but we live and we sacrifice. But we present our bodies, actually present ourselves. That means we're holding ourselves out there and serving other people. We're presenting ourselves as a living sacrifice. It says, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. How do we grow in the fruits of the Spirit? Turn back to Galatians 5, verse 22 and 23, and think about this composite church member, Eli, as we conclude the sermon here. Think about this composite servant. Everything he went through, similar to so many of the things we go through in various ways. Think about how each of these fruits of the Spirit could be developed because of what Eli went through. It says, but the fruit of the Spirit, Galatians 5:22, the fruit of the Spirit is love. Eli had to learn to love others. He thought he loved people, but it was only going through the difficult times that he really began to set himself aside and focus on the needs of others. It says joy. How many times had he been unjoyful? I don't need this kind of thing on my Sabbath. No, he couldn't experience joy because it was all about him and what he was experiencing, what others were doing to him. It took time and service to really be giving to others and not focus on himself. And then he could have that joy. What about peace? How many times, again, did he not experience peace in the midst of God's people? But part of it was his problem. It wasn't all his problem, but he certainly could be at peace in the midst of problems if he was led by God's Spirit. And if it just didn't bother him as much as human nature caused it to bother him. What about long-suffering? Eli had to learn to suffer long with others and their problems. The fact that, no, sometimes they didn't follow through. Sometimes they wanted to do things their way. He learned to suffer long, to be the one that takes the punch sometimes. And it's okay. Swallow his own pride. That's okay. We could go through all of them. Kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness. Don't just dismiss somebody. Gently approach them and talk to them about how we might work through this. A spirit of gentleness is learned through going through these things. Self-control, again, how many times is it easy to just feel the way we want to feel the way we feel without controlling ourselves? Well, when we're in the midst of serving with one another and dealing with these types of things and working through them together, that is a way that we have to exercise self-control. And we learn to do it by serving. It says, against such there is no law. When we serve one another, we grow and mature spiritually. Let's conclude in Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12 and verse 4. We have to be willing to approach one another and learn to approach one another as Eli did. At any point, he could have thrown up his hands and said, I'm not going to face this ever again. I'm not going to deal with my problems. I'm not going to be patient with other people. I'm not going to be forgiving to other people. He could have just walked away from it at any time, but he wouldn't have ended up being the person he is today. And as I look over this audience, I see many, you wouldn't have been the person you are today without service, without learning to give. And that is a process that we go through, even though there are bumps along the way. It says in Romans 12, verse 4, For as we have many members in one body, we are all different. There are many members, but there is one body. But all members do not have the same function. So we, being many, are one body in Christ and individually members of one another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. And I won't go through all the ones it mentions here. It talks about various ways that we can serve, but we use our gifts. We are to use them. And it is by using our gifts and serving with those gifts that we become one. And when we run into those problems where we're frustrated, we're upset with people, to leave isn't becoming one. Becoming one is facing those problems together. And that's how we become a body, is when we work through, we serve with one another, and we realize that it is through service that we grow. And I, again, use the example of service, but we could talk about any godly thing when we work through it together. And there's so, service is about everywhere, isn't it? When we do whatever we do with a serving attitude, we're serving others. And when we serve others, it helps us to grow, and God shapes us and molds us. But it's never easy. But that is the task that is really preparing us for our next role of service. One that unless we go through these troubles today, we won't be prepared for when Jesus Christ returns. Christ is using service to mold and shape us into the kind of people who will be leaders in the world tomorrow. Let's serve and let's allow God to mold and shape us.